Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter. At 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It is one of the most difficult financial conversations to have with yourself or with your family, but it is also one of the most important ones. Writing a will. Who gets what, and what are your final wishes? Well, tonight we're going to try to make that conversation a bit easier for you. My guests are attorney Ethel Mitchell. She's a wills and trust expert with Wills and Trusts LLC, and Muriel Garr, financial expert and, of course, co-host of Beyond the Bling on Sirius XM Channel 141. Lines are open. Give us a call if you have a question, if you have a comment about your will. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Ladies, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Ethel, let me start with you. What is a will, for those who aren't familiar?
Okay. A last will and testament is a legal document that says, number one, who's in charge of your assets after your death? Number two, who your heirs are or your intended legatees. When you have something that you get from a will, it's called a legacy. So the person getting it is called a legatee. So you say, this is who I want to get what my stuff is, okay? And it has to be executed in a very particular way. Execution is very important with wills.
What do you mean by that?
By that, a lot of people have the notion that if you just notarize the document, that's sufficient. That is not sufficient at all. The will has to be witnessed, by two people who are not named in the will. Also, you cannot have the person who's named in the will be a witness to the will, or they can forfeit whatever they're supposed to get, okay, from the will. There has to be what we call an attestation clause that says the witness saw the person sign it, and the person saw the witnesses sign, and they signed in front of each other.
So the story that we've often seen in pop culture about somebody writing a will on a napkin at a restaurant,
mm-mm.
No good,
mm-mm.
Not going to happen.
Mm-mm.
Didn't think
mm-mm.
so.
There are a few exceptions to what we call a holographic will, like an entirely handwritten will. Sometimes you can get them admitted into probate, but that's not something that you want to depend on.
Now, what is probate?
Probate is the legal process where you take the document to a court and you say, Your Honor, this is so-and-so's will. We want it to be admitted so that it can be administered, i.e., we can distribute the property according to its terms.
Mm-hmm. Muriel, why is it so difficult for people to talk about putting a will together? Why is this such a struggle for people?
Death and dying. Mm. A will is a final, it is the final statement of your life and what you want to happen to the things that you've accumulated over the course of your life. And most people aren't comfortable with the thought of dying. Even in their worst state of living, the thought of dying is end. Closure. So having that conversation becomes somewhat morbid, and most people aren't comfortable with it. Then when you think about how you're going to have that conversation about actually this dispersing, whether it be cash or things, you know, do you really want to have that conversation with those that you're going to be actually giving those items to? Because that creates the other conversation that generally happens after you die when they start fighting over the cast iron skillet.
Mm-hmm.
People just don't want to have those type of conversations. The sad part about it, though, is that the failure to have those conversations actually speaks to, and this is my opinion, it speaks to how much you care for those that you say that you love the most. Because, well, let me finish, Ethel. Let me finish. Because death in and of itself can be extremely stressful. But providing those who you care about with clear instructions and direction helps to alleviate some of the stress and pressures that come along with that final process.
Or may create stress and pressure.
Well, you got to, totally got there.
You agree with me when I got down the road?
Yeah.
Because at first, Ethel was like, hold on. Wait a minute.
Go ahead, Ethel.
Well, one of the things I would recommend people consider is not having the discussion. Have it done with a lawyer. Have the document prepared according to what you want, okay? But you don't have to discuss it with your family. And sometimes that is not a good idea. Discussing it is not necessarily a good idea.
But the challenge comes in, Ethel, you know, so states do not keep wills in their inventory. So,
well, some do. No, Maryland does.
But most states do not keep wills in their inventory. So then what happens, we have this fully executed document, which you've talked to our listeners about, is all the components that are needed. And a lot of attorneys do not like to keep those documents in their files. So then you have a situation where, you know, the will comes, the family members know that X, Y, Z was very detailed and there was a will somewhere. Shows up missing.
And I don't want to get too far down into the weeds about, you know, whether or not Uncle Ned knows where the will is.
But that's important.
And I'm sure it's important that someone knows. But I would say because I have a will. Okay.
Where it is?
They know where it is. Yes, indeed. There are two people who know where it is, but they don't know what's in it.
Exactly. I don't want
My daughter to know about the $50 million that she's going to get from me when I pass because...
You don't want her to be excited about you dying early.
Or God forbid, contributing to an early demise. No, I'm just kidding. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about your last will and testament. How should it be done? How is it done? How much is it going to cost, for example? Can you do it yourself? All of those things we're trying to answer tonight. Let me go to the phone lines real quick. Marcia calling from Northeast D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening, everyone.
Hi.
Everybody's having a good day. Newsflash, I got will. Yes, I have a will. I have a health care power of attorney. I have two people that to pay my bills if something happened to me, you know, if I get incapacitated, because that's super duper important. And it's too bad, especially people of color have a problem with that. And it's not about assets. It's about, like you said, having people have a stress-free time at your passing. Thank you for letting me chat tonight.
Thank you so much, Marcia. Marcia, I appreciate it. She mentioned a lot. What specifically was she referring to?
Well, she referred to what I always say everybody really needs to have is the last will and testament, the power of attorney, and the medical directive. The will does not take effect until you die, period. So whatever's in the will, you don't need to deal with it until you have died, except to have it. And I always recommend the person that is named as a personal representative should know where it is, if not actually have it. Okay, because they're going to be called upon to carry out the terms of the will. And I've had so many people say, my aunt told me I was going to be the personal representative, but I can't find the will. So at least have that note, tell that person where it is. And if you see yourself getting really sick or something, give the will to the person. You know, just give the will to the person and just tell them, you know, keep it private until I'm out of here, you know, but give them the original will. That's important.
What is the difference between a living will and a will? Because we hear a lot about that.
That is such a misnomer. I don't know where the term living will came from.
Mm-hmm.
Living will is a health care directive. The living will says if you want to be on life support or not. if you're in an extreme circumstance. Doctor says you're going to die in a few minutes, you know, like imminently, so to speak. You're in a vegetative state or you're in the last stages of cancer, and there's no probability at all that you ever regain consciousness.
Think of it as three documents that work together, but they work based on a timeline. So a power of attorney, you have to be alive. Mm-hmm. In order to give someone power to act on your behalf. Mm-hmm. The living will or the medical directive provides someone the opportunity to act on your behalf when you can no longer make a decision as to whether or not you want to be on life support, etc. The will comes into play once you have died.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So all three of those should be in what I call your life financial toolkit.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I won't do one without the other, by the way.
I beg your pardon?
I won't do one without the other.
What do you mean?
Meaning that I don't do just a power of attorney, or I don't do just a living will. If you have one already and it's good, then I don't have to redo it. But I won't do just a will and don't do the power of attorney and the medical directive, because you really need them
all. And she talked about that. She said because it's about legacy. And so what she's doing is making sure that the clients that come to see her are thinking through their whole continuum of life and the transfer of wealth in a way that is efficient and effective for those that you love and care about.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about your last will and testament, whether you have one or not. If you don't have one, you need to look into having that done. If you have one and it's been around for a while, you may need to make some adjustments. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. Don't forget, you can call us even after 7:30. We will continue to take your phone calls. Mr. Williams, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? And turn your radio down. Go right ahead, Mr. Williams.
Yeah, I'm 25 years older than my wife. Well, our house is in my name only. The bill is, the loan is in my name only, and she's on the deed. Do I need a will in case I pass before she does?
Yes. The deed is very important, okay? If her name is on the deed, then if you die, well, I shouldn't say it like that. If the name is on, if both names are on the deed as tenants by the entirety.
What does that mean?
It's a certain way of ownership.
Okay.
Okay, so you want to look at the deed or have a lawyer look at your deed and make sure her name says your name and her name as tenants by the entirety.
But that depends on the state, though.
No. Tenants by the entirety is the same throughout the country, so that one dies, the other one owns it without having to go through probate at all. Tenants in common is when one owns an undivided one-half interest.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah, let's let the lawyers speak.
Sorry.
Don't apologize for your ignorance.
Tenants by the entirety can only be between spouses, between married people, okay? So even if you had bought the house before you were married, people don't realize that. And both names were on it. You need to get another deed done that says tenants by the entirety.
Okay.
But you still need a will, sir. Please, because you're going to own more than just your house when you die. So if your intention is for your wife to get your stuff when you die, have a lawyer do a will. Make sure your insurance beneficiary says she's the beneficiary. Make sure your bank accounts say that she is. If it is, you're in good shape, but make sure of all of those things, because there are many ways to dispose of property. Okay. But a will is important. It really is.
Mr. Williams, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I've got about a minute before I need to go to a break, but this is something that's really, really critical. As we know, earlier this year, Aretha Franklin died, and there were reports that she had no will and an estate that is estimated anywhere from between $25 to $50 million. Whether this is in Detroit or DC or Maryland, help us out. No will, you got a lot of property, a lot of money. What happens?
It's a waste of so much in our community when Prince didn't have a will. Dr. Martin Luther King didn't have a will. We have to change the cultural narrative, because we are losing so much money that could benefit the community. I mean, think about it. Aretha or Prince or any of those people could have funded millions of dollars in scholarships to our schools. They could have funded hospitals. They could fund the NAACP by themselves probably and still give money to their children and anybody else they wanted to. So it is a true problem that we have in our community that we have to change.
I want to drill down a little bit more on that. The legal piece of what happens to the money and the property if you pass away and you have no will. We're going to get to that in just a bit. We're going to also talk to Ronald calling from Maryland, Eric calling from Fort Washington, Wanda calling from Virginia. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. We continue this conversation as we talk about the last will and testament. Make sure you get that done. It's happening on Sirius XM channel 141 in just a few seconds. The Daily Drum will continue. I'm Harold Fisher, the original Quiet Storm, next on 96.3 WHUR. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about wills and trusts, helping you make critical end-of-life financial decisions. My guests are attorney Ethel Mitchell. She's a will expert with Wills and Trusts LLC. And Muriel Garr. Of course, you know, she is one of our financial experts. She's also a co-host of Beyond the Bling on Sirius XM channel 141. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Back to the phone lines. Let's talk to Eric calling from Fort Washington. Eric, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, I have a couple questions. You know, we've talked about the huge fortunes and how those properties need to be disposed of or the finances need to be disposed of. But let's look at somebody that doesn't believe they have much. You've got a $500,000 house. You've got a mutual fund with $2,000 over here. You've got a small 401k with $40,000 over here. But you've got a record collection or you've got a – what kinds of documents or things do you take to an attorney that you want to talk sit down and talk about putting in the will?
That's such a great question.
It's a great question. What we do at Wills and Trust is we send you a client information form that gives you a place to put name, address, phone number for yourself, who would be your power of attorney, your medical director. Then there's a place to put down your assets, you know, the address of your house, what the approximate value is, how much is on the mortgage, life insurance, collections, retirement, you know, all those kinds of things. And you physically bring that into the office at your first meeting. So when we sit down together, and I even like people to bring in one statement from each of those different accounts and so forth. And if you have a copy of your deed, that is really important. I always look at deeds because sometimes they don't say what you think they say.
What do you mean by that?
Well, somebody may be living in their grandmother's house and assume that the grandmother had given it to their mother and so on like that. And we look at the deed and see where it never got transferred. Or maybe you had bought a house with your sister or your brother. There's something we can do with, and it says, you know, just the two names, which means tenants in common. We can do another deed that says tenants with rights of survivorship. So when one dies, the other one gets it outright. You know, there are all kind of little tricks that lawyers have that make life go a whole lot easier when you die. But we don't know that until we actually look at it. And the deed is a critical document. It really is.
And to Eric's question, and to drill down a little bit more, because he asked about financials.
Yeah.
But there are also... And I know this because, as I said, I have a will. Instructions about what should happen with you, your body, your funeral, all of there are instructions.
I do those in
they have nothing whatsoever to do with the money, but they have to do with what you what may happen with.
We do all that. Yeah, with your body.
How detailed?
I think we confuse the will to say that the will only has to deal with monetary or things of value. The will is supposed to speak to what your final wishes are when you die. That includes where you're going to be buried.
How
you're going to be buried. All of that. The more detail, and it goes back to what I said in the top of the show, the more detail you provide for your loved ones takes the anxiety out of that process.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. There you go, Eric.
Yeah,
Thank you so much for your phone call.
I agree with that, but let me suggest something. I like to do a separate burial directive that says I want to be cremated, or I even will put down in the burial directive, I have a contract with so-and-so cemetery, you know, because a lot of people prepay for those things. Mm-hmm. I want a so-and-so funeral home. I want a memorial service at such and such a church, you know, those kinds of things. But that's a separate, I do it as a separate document because often the will doesn't get read until the person is buried as a practical matter.
Well, it depends on, this comes into relationships, and so relationships in the relationships and families. And hopefully there is someone in that immediate circle, as you spoke to, you know, if you're getting ill, that you've shared that document and they have that document. Mm-hmm. They use that as a guiding tool through that process.
Yeah. And, you really want to do that.
And to that point, and I think, and I don't mean to sound morbid, but I think it needs to be efficient. Because if you've designated two or three people in your family or in your circle where they know where your document happens to be, okay? Let's say that perhaps you need to remind them about that at certain points. And God forbid, but what if those people pass away before you do?
Yeah, you need to review all this stuff fairly often. I mean, at least, I say once you're over 65, every 2 or 3 years. Maybe between 40 and 60, every 4 or 5 years. But I give people a list of things if they happen. Somebody dies. Your relationship with somebody changes. You know, whatever. You come into a lot of money and you lose a lot of money. You know, you want to review all of that. But I wanted to go back to the question you asked before that I never really responded to. And that is what happens when you don't have a will.
Yeah.
Okay. Every state in the union has what we call the law of intestacy. And what that is where the state says, if you don't have a will, this is how your property is going to be distributed. Mm-hmm. So what that means is, let's say you die in anywhere around here. There's a law that says if you're married, then your spouse gets X percentage. If you have children, they get X percentage. If you don't have any children but you die and you have a spouse, then your spouse gets a percentage and your parents get a percentage. A lot of people don't realize that. If you don't have any parents, then your brothers and sisters get a percentage. So there is what's called the law of intestacy that is going to govern how your property is distributed, irrespective of your wishes. And that's another reason to have a will, because so often that law is not what you think it's going to be. It's not going to say everything goes to my spouse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not going to say, in fact, a lot of spouses wind up realizing that they own stuff half and half with the parent who may not like them. And that happens, you know. Whereas if you had a will that said, when I die, my spouse gets everything, then that will would override the law of intestacy.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ronald, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Ronald. What's on your mind?
Yes, y'all have a very good subject tonight.
Thank you so much.
I've been involved with two of them, and in both situations, they did not leave a will. We had a lot of property in D.C., just broke the families all to pieces, and they're still fighting, not only with the property, but the taxes. So my experience has been, and my question is this, can you do a will with all your instructions, your insurance policies and everything, have that notarized and a set of instructions in a safe deposit box? and in the event of your demise, have an administrator pull the will from that and read it and use that as your final will and testament.
In order for the administrator to actually get access to the safe deposit box, one, they have to be on the safe deposit box. What happens in a financial institution, they actually have individuals who their job is to check the obituary and to see when individuals actually die. When they receive notice that someone has died, the box becomes sealed. And once the box becomes sealed, no one can get access to the box. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to leave your will or any important documents in a safe deposit box, you need to ensure that individuals, that one individual is on the box so that in the event you die, they're on the box, they have a key, and they can get access to the box.
Very good advice. Very good advice. The other thing that we haven't talked about yet is one of the most efficient ways to distribute property after death is through a trust.
Yeah, but that was going to be my next question.
That is, especially if you have a lot of property or if you have property in different states. A trust is a document. Most trusts are revocable. That's what I'm going to talk about primarily. So a revocable trust means you can always change it, you know, if you want to. It would be your trust. You would be the trustee and you would be the beneficiary. Your trust would say, when I die, I want my property to go to my daughter.
Okay? Why can't a will do
that? A will can do that, but a trust is self-executing, which means that you don't
have to go to probate.
It doesn't have to go through probate.
And probate, and
it's
there's a
huge
fee,
difference.
Probate is a tax. Probate is a revenue generator for a municipality. And you know how I love generating revenue for municipalities, not.
Or by the way, Ronald, thank you so much for your question. Please go right ahead.
But the other part of probate and FO, probate is public.
It's very public. All your business in the street.
A trust is a sealed document and
That's
it
right.
is not public.
That's
so
right.
If you want people in your business or in the business of individuals who are going to inherit, then you think about whether or not you want to actually leave all this stuff in a will or whether or not you want to set it up in a trust. And where there's a revocable and an irrevocable trust, you have an option of either one, which can be set up and it can be changed at any time.
Okay.
Yeah, that's huge.
Wanda, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Wanda. What's on your mind?
Hi, good evening.
How are you? Go right
to
ahead.
You and your guests. The question I had, my question was, what is the difference between a will and a trust? And you just answered that. The second question I have is, if you have a will, does the property go into probate?
Yes. Let me explain. A lot of people don't understand that. And let me also make another distinction. There are different ways to pass property.
Thank you.
That you need to work with a lawyer to work with. You can have, for example, a transfer on death deed for your house, and that means that when it has to be recorded while you're alive, but it means that you don't have to go through probate to transfer your house at your death. You definitely want to use a payable on death beneficiary or a transfer on death beneficiary form on your bank accounts and your brokerage accounts. So again, they go outside of probate. Probate is only for those assets that you don't have any other way to get out of the name of the dead person into the living person. Okay, I have a certified financial planning degree also. So I don't do financial planning, but I work a lot with helping my clients to do their beneficiary designations consistent with their wishes. You don't want your life insurance paid into your will or into your estate because then that money is going to be used to pay your bills with. Okay? You want your life insurance to go according to a beneficiary designation, either outside of your will or one caveat. If you're trying to benefit minors, you don't want to put a minor's name on your bank account. You don't want to put a minor's name on as beneficiary of your life insurance because they're incompetent in the law. The judge is going to appoint a lawyer. That money is going to go into a lawyer's conservator account, and that's going to be held for the benefit of the minor until they reach 18 in most places. And you really don't want a minor getting $300,000. You just don't want that. Mm-hmm. So that's right. Where the trust, the trust has a lot of different uses, but one of the biggest benefits of a trust is that it controls after death. So you can have a trust that says, when I die, I want my $500,000 life insurance policy to go into the trust that's going to be created when I die for my minor child.
And it can be stair-stepped.
Absolutely. You can say pay for education, health education, maintenance, and support. Those are the primary things you usually use. And then you say when they reach 30, you know, they can have 50%. If they don't go to college, they can't get any of it until they're 40. If they get convicted of a felony, they don't get anything. I mean, you can really make it do what you want it to do.
I need to take a break. Thank you so much, Wanda, for your phone call. Michael in Baltimore, Kim also in Baltimore. We're going to talk to you next, so please stay with us. We're talking about your last will and testament. Stay with us. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about wills and trusts tonight, helping you make critical end-of-life financial decisions. Let me quickly grab some of these phone calls. Still have lots to talk about. Kim calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling, Kim. What's on your mind?
Hi. Before I ask my one question, I just would ask Mr. Fisher, can you just leave me on hold for like 20 seconds so I can hear that?
Oh, you'll hear everything.
I'm out of the car. I'm not in the car.
Yeah, you'll hear everything. Go right ahead.
All right. Thank you. So I was listening to you guys. You guys were talking about legacy and all that great stuff. And unfortunately, I'm just not cut from that cloth. I come from I don't even know who these people are. They're family, but they're not really family. So I don't have a husband. I don't have any kids. I don't have any sisters or brothers. So even if I were to establish a will and how can I identify a PR when honestly I'm going to be passed away? People are going to do what they want to do. So how would that even be possible for the things that I've worked for to not be squandered?
That's a great question.
Yeah. Kim, so all of the things that you said that you don't have, but for the purpose of your life, what is it that is important to you that you have been contributing to daily? And so it's not about who you have in your family. It's about what are the things that are important to you? Are you an animal lover? Are you passionate about education? Are you passionate about health care? And so there's something that is important to you that makes you get up every day. And in the event when you do die, it may not necessarily have to do about people, but you may want to make sure that what it is that is important to you, you're able to leave something to.
Yes, ma'am. But how would I do that? How would I establish a PR? Who can I... Can the court be the PR if I'm honest?
No, it can be
somebody who can do it for me.
Yeah. No, go right ahead.
You can name any person you want who you consider responsible to be your personal representative. Okay,
yes.
You
okay.
can. It does not have to be a family member. In fact, quite often.
I thought it had to be.
No. Quite often, it is better not to be a family member. You know, name somebody that you have confidence in. Name somebody who's going to be honest. And name somebody who's going to follow your directions. It does not have to be a family member at all. I have a lot of single people who do not have children, and they leave wonderful gifts to education. They leave for scholarships. I had one man left money to the National Rehabilitation Center because he had a stroke and they did such a beautiful job of working with him. I've identified a group that gives out scholarships all over the country. And that's what they do. You say, I want to give scholarships to, and you describe your demographic, and they have assured me and actually sent me documents of people who have said, I want money to go to African-American students in this university studying this particular thing. Mm-hmm. And they will identify them and distribute the money on your behalf. So you have a lot of options. You really do.
Well, Kim, thank you so much for
Very
your phone
good question.
Call. Let's go to Michelle calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. Michelle, what's on your mind?
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call this evening.
Sure.
I had a question. You mentioned your experts mentioned putting a trust in place to bequeath property to avoid probate. My issue is I have four children, one of which is a legal adult. So I don't know what would be the best method to distribute any assets that I have. Would it make sense to assign him as the executor? Because he's grown, he's legally grown, but he's not, I don't think, old enough to make decisions. So can I designate two people to do that, or have someone that we trust as a family to help inform him on the choices? I just don't understand what that process would be.
Go right ahead.
You always name a person that you feel is responsible. You don't have to worry about naming a relative. It is not wise to name a child, even if it's a 20-year-old child, okay? So just the fact that they are legal does not make them the ideal person. You find the best person that you can possibly find. And then the other piece is, because you have minor children, you may want to use a trust, because a trust can hold that property until they reach whatever age you want them to get the property at. Okay. And the way that works is you would work with the lawyer. You have your trust done. Then we would actually do a deed from yourself to yourself of your house, putting it into your trust. And the person you name, let's say it's your uncle. Your uncle is your trustee. Then your uncle would have control over the house. He would manage it for the benefit of your children. And then when they reached a particular age that you say in your trust, then he would turn over, he would do a deed, basically, to the four of them, or whatever you say to have done with it. Okay. Okay.
But Ethel, she also asked about having co-executors. And could you speak to
that? You can, yeah. On a trust, you can have co-executors. On a will, it's not advisable, only as a practical matter. When you take a will to court and you have two people, they're going to make both of those people sign every check, every document.
It gets complicated, really, just as
a practical matter. But as a trust, you absolutely can have co-trustees, and it's quite common. Yeah.
Michelle, thank you so much for your phone call. Let me go to Michael. Michael calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, good evening, and thanks for taking my call. It's a great discussion.
Thank you.
And your guest has pretty much taken the words out of my mouth for a lot of things that I was going to say. But she's an attorney, and from my profession, and from where I sit and where I have sat, people, just because someone has power of attorney or will, it doesn't necessarily mean that your wishes are going to be met.
Explain what do you mean by that?
Well, you know, I have seen circumstances where people, you know, it's easy to throw that word around, I'm the power of attorney. What I've discovered is, first of all, a lot of people don't even understand their role and their real responsibility and what that means to be the power of attorney. Because you can also be somewhat held liable. Mm-hmm. From a criminal perspective, from a legal perspective, sometimes the state might have to come in and take the power of attorney from you.
Okay.
And I've seen those kinds of situations, and the state say, well, we're going to be the guardian because Ms. Smith was being neglected.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit briefly about that, Ethel?
Yeah,
because most of our conversation has been under the assumption that the person that you pick, the person that you trust, will follow your instructions, that person will be an honest steward of your wishes.
Well, one of the things about the will, let me speak to that. He was talking about power of attorney, which is while you're alive. One thing people don't realize is you can revoke your power of attorney. Okay, a lot of people don't realize that once you give the power of attorney, you can take it back. Okay. As a practical matter, however, what I see happening is, not that much, but I do see it happening, where somebody will indeed misuse the power of attorney. And not only will the person have the ability to revoke it, but if necessary, they can go into court. And just as he says, that person can be held criminally responsible because they violated their fiduciary duty to that person. You try to avoid that situation, but it does come up from time to time. One of the things about having a will or a trust is that the will can be enforced by the court. so that the will, if a beneficiary, for example, says, "Your Honor, the personal representative isn't following the terms of the will. They're not giving us the information." Or for that matter, even the trust, if even though it's a private document, a beneficiary has a right to a copy of it. And if they're not getting what they're supposed to get, you can bring an action in court to enforce the provisions that are there.
And while Michael brings up an excellent point, and not to get too far down into the weeds of the complexities of what can happen when things go wrong, because I think it's important that at least we get a lot of people to begin the process.
Yes. To
mm-hmm. understand. Yeah, we do understand that things can go wrong and that there are unscrupulous people whom we love.
Yeah, but there's one thing. There's one thing that we just need to be mindful, particularly in a power of attorney. There's a responsibility. So if you're going to revoke powers, it is the responsibility of the individual that issued the power of attorney to notify the individual who had originally been granted the power that their power has been revoked. And oftentimes what happens is individuals change the power of attorney and they do not properly notify the individual who initially had the powers, that their powers have been revoked.
And to my point, mm-hmm. just
point.
Because you mm-hmm. someone has the power of attorney, often as we have seen, that there may be issues of incapacitation after that happens. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I say it does begin to get very, very complex and complicated. One thing Michael, thank you so much for bringing up your point real quick, because I'm really low on time. How much can a basic will, if there is such a thing, cost? And can you do it on your own? Can you go online to a will website? And I know as an attorney that takes, you know, food
I absolutely,
off your plate. But,
no, it isn't you know, even, but, in fact, it puts food on my plate. I cannot tell you the number of online wills, the number of self-done wills and trusts that are so messed up that people come, and then as lawyers, if we can, and it can take years, and it costs so much more than it would have cost to just come and let us do it right in the first place.
Yeah, but I think we have to have another conversation about that, Ethel, because particularly in communities of color, we've got to crawl before we can walk. And so if LegalZoom.com is the beginning for you to actually sit down and have that conversation with yourself and start to document the things that you need to have in your toolkit, then we've got to start somewhere. And then as a result of hearing this conversation, we've gone from LegalZoom.com to coming and seeing an attorney to say, okay, let's shore this up. Let's tighten this up a little bit. Mm-hmm. But what we've seen, particularly in communities of color, because we haven't taken the baby step, we end up losing what you talked about at the top of the show, and that's that legacy, that intergenerational transfer of wealth, because we haven't started somewhere.
And also, there are other resources that in your home of your house of worship that may offer some help at reduced or no cost. There are legal aids that that states offer. If you are a senior citizen, there may be some resources as well. And mm-hmm. and as a matter of fact, we're going to put some of those on our website on WHUR.com, and you will hear that as well as the podcast. That'll all be posted on our website tonight before 9 o'clock. I want to thank both of you, Attorney Ethel Mitchell and Muriel Garr. Always a pleasure, Muriel, to have you on to provide some insight. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, October 10th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.